Good evening. Welcome to the Salieri Report. This is Catherine Austin Fitz. Today is April 20th, 2017. This is the third part of the first quarter wrap-up. Tonight, the equity overview. The last 2 weeks, we've done our big theme and the news trends and stories. If you look at the cover of this first quarter wrap-up, it's called The Clash of Civilizations. Can a new administration preserve a prosperous economy without more debt, crime, and war? It would appear, if we just finalize the question today, that the answer is a resounding no, unfortunately. We've seen remarkable U-turns in the Trump administration, and it probably has something to do with the extraordinary dependence of the financial markets on the war machine. We have, for the first quarter presentation, a web presentation with all the charts, and I would encourage you to jump on the web presentation and be following on the charts. There's a big summary chart we've put up at the top, and I'm just going to use that to walk through how the markets did. And I'm going to use a bring down to April 20th, just because, after all, that's when we're talking about. So I'll be working with year-to-date performance using the 420 close. First, let's start off with the fixed income markets. The U.S. dollar ended April 20th year-to-date down to a little bit more than 2.5%. It's tried to take that run up to 106 or 110 that we thought it might do, but it really hasn't made it even half the way up. So, but it's held the $100 line. It closed today at 99.68, or was that at the close? So we're a little bit below the 100 line, but I think the chances at this point of the big rally are very small, unless we really do get a serious war condition. So I just think the big bear trap rally in the dollar that I've been concerned about looks further and further away, particularly as the Trump administration revs up the war machine. Corporate bonds and the bond market has come back. To take you back to the election, we really saw equities surge after the Trump victory and the Republican victory. And the bond market just gets whacked. And it's finally come back now with the drumbeats of war. We see the corporate bond up almost 2% for the year, the long treasury up 4.35%, the intermediate treasury ETF up 2.4%. So treasury market finally ended up relatively strong, but believe me, it's during these first 3.5 months, it has looked very strong, and the bond market really got whacked after the election, so it's just beginning to come back. The S&P now up 5.23%, the Dow up 4.1%, and the Russell up 2.27% on top of all the gains and the drop-off in earnings. You've never seen PEs this high, or they're really at the top of the range. The defense ETF is strong at 7.4%. Consumer discretionary and consumer staples trading between 7% and 9%. So the consumer is continuing to carry, although I think we're seeing more and more being carried by the inelastic demand. The industrial sector was stronger when Trump was talking manufacturing, but it's now up a little bit less than the S&P, 5.5%. And the home builders have been relatively strong as well. We saw coming out of the election, the financials doing really well. As the interest rates got bumped up by the Fed, that helped the financials, but they backed off a little bit. Europe significantly outperformed the U.S. The German DAX closed up, it was down a little bit today, so it's up 5% for the year. But the Vanguard Europe was up 8%, And so generally for the year, because the US market has so outperformed for the last couple of years, Europe is starting to come up and do better. But still has a lot to catch up, and it's going to be very interesting to see how the European elections affect that, particularly the French election this weekend. And then the developed markets strong, 7%. The emerging markets surprised at 12%. Again, we were really worried if the dollar was strong that the emerging markets could have gotten whacked. And China continues to do well. China's up 9.71% on the large caps and up 11% on the small caps. India ETF up 18%. The Indian growth continues to be stronger than Chinese growth. And then gold up 11%, silver up 13, a little bit more than 13%. And commodities not doing well. Commodities down 4.92%, and oil still in the basement. The Baltic Dry Index, though, perking up almost 30% for the year. Now, if you step back and look at these markets, the real concern, of course, is low yields, and that's not what we've seen since the Trump win, with the bond market coming back. But I think the question in everybody's mind is how can the market continue to stay so high? I continue to tell you that we are seriously overdue for a 25% correction, and we're coming into the summer. And the old adage in the US market, sell in May and go away, is still operative. 95% of the gains in the S&P happened between effectively October and June. So coming into summer, you don't expect it to be strong. And you see constant indications that the Trump surge is now over. Now, it's interesting. One of the big discussions this year is what would the Fed do with their swollen balance sheet? Would they continue to raise interest rates, and how would the market react to interest rates? I'm a great believer that the equity markets can cope with 100 to 150 basis point increase in a year, and I'd be surprised to see us get that. And I think there's real pressure on to bump those interest rates if they can. Again, because the pension funds and insurance companies need it. We had in the conversation we have with Rod Kirby on interest rate swaps, we talk about what a terrible hit it is on the economy to subsidize government with very low interest rates. It's very hard on capital allocations. Anyway, but I have not been concerned about interest rates. I'm a lot more concerned about what happens if we can't make a turn, both from a unipolar world to a multipolar world, and if we can't make a turn in the federal budget. And right now, I would say, if anything, the Trump administration, I said when the election happened that we had a competition between the people who wanted to rebuild North America versus the people who wanted to get the empire going. And if we've seen what the Trump administration has done so far, if anything, it's trying to keep, give both teams what they want. And of course, that all falls apart when you hit the budget. So this really has profound implications for what's coming in terms of the federal budget and the debt limit and the healthcare debates, which is one of the big one of the pigs moving through the snake of the budget. Now, I did scenarios in the annual wrap-up, and I want to take a look at those scenarios in terms of the markets and investment opportunities, investment strategies. So if you could pull up, I would really recommend that you pull up the annual wrap-up and the web presentation, and look at the get ready, get ready, get ready section for the four scenarios. The way we do scenario design, it's straight out of the scenario design taught by Eric Best and some of the groups he's worked for. We had a great Saleri report with him this year called Scenario Thinking, and I recommend it to you. But basically, you pick out two variables which you consider to be the driving forces, and the two variables we chose for our scenarios this year is, One was, would political and economic alignment be unipolar or would it be multipolar? In other words, would America try and keep the empire going or would it adjust to a more collaborative multipolar world? And then the second was, would return on investment to taxpayers in the federal budget be positive versus negative? Now, this is not just a U.S. issue because, in fact, the entire global financial system at this point really does run off of and is very affected by the federal budget and the federal securities and treasury operation. Anyway, if you lay those two variables, unipolar or multipolar, and then positive versus negative return on investment to taxpayer, you get four quadrants, which is sort of four different views of the world. And one of the things I keep stressing is how important it is for your strategy of your investment of your time or your money, whether it's for yourself or your business or practice or whatever it is you do in terms of a professional career or income generation. It's extremely important in allocating your investment of time and money that you consider the fact that it is impossible to predict the future. You know, if anything, we need to get into the business of inventing the future. But what you need to do is to be prepared to bob and weave, to go to navigate any scenario. So ideally, the more resources you have, the more you can allocate to make sure you're fine in all scenarios. So I think it's very helpful to understand the possible scenarios. And then if you have a plan to deal with them, that's going to give you a lot more power to sort of navigate the environment. So let me talk about the four that I used in the annual wrap-up, and let's talk a little bit about your investment strategy. So in scenario number one, which was the popsicle index rising, we're in a multipolar world and we have a positive return on investment. I gave this a 30% chance. Now, one of the big variables behind these two variables I've chosen are we going to be in a human or inhuman civilization? And I have to tell you, to me, this is the most important issue. And I'm clearly on the side. I'm only interested in being part of a human civilization. But clearly the popsicle index rising is where we get the human thing right. And we're definitely moving in a human situation. So when you look at opportunities in that world, that's a world in which decentralization really works. And so there are going to be a lot of opportunities at the local level. I think it's important in all cases to track the changes that are coming in tax policies. The administration, U.S. administration, is working on sweeping tax reform and seem to be very optimistic. Now, whether that optimistic is appropriate, given the squabbles they're going to have on debt limit or on health care, I can't say. Certainly, I think it's pretty likely that they'll be able to repatriate a lot of the cash abroad and give the corporations a sort of free pass to bring that money back without taxation or normal taxation. So keep an eye on tax reform because that's going to have, certainly at least in the short run, a very big impact. But I would say in a multipolar environment where we manage to turn the investment to a positive return on investment, there's going to be an awful lot of opportunity on a decentralized basis and a local basis. But also there's going to be plenty of training globally, but it's going to be local to local. So it's going to small guy, not as much going through big corporations. Now, in this kind of world, we're going to be dealing with extraordinary volatility. And that's why it's very important when you think about investment that you're prepared. Don't put money in something unless you're prepared to live through the volatility. And don't put something in money or money in things that you don't think can live through that volatility. In this environment, I'm going to tell you what I'm going to tell you in all scenarios. Your best investment is your own education, your own health, and your own career. One thing I'm going to stress again and again In all these scenarios, given the uncertainty and the volatility, you need to have a clear mind and a strong body. And that's going to be exceptionally hard to do in this environment. And you need to proactively invest in it. In the Popsicle Index rising scenario, corporate stocks are going to have, particularly ones that have a positive return and can function in lots of different political environments because they do have a positive return to both investors and the general economy, are going to be very good investments. Dividends are going to matter a lot. Now, also in this environment, because Asia is converging in terms of per capita income, riding the wave of the growth of the Asian consumer and that convergence, including the importance of the Asian space program. One of the things I'm doing is spending a lot of time working on looking for opportunities in space, because I think that that is going to be a major investment, both in the developed countries and in Asia. But I say the same thing I say on all the scenarios. The best short-term investment opportunity is, in fact, there's no way to know. We are dealing with a very wide range of possibilities in different scenarios. So, and that's why you have to be prepared for significant volatility. For example, if you're in the domestic U.S. equity markets, we've got to go down more than 25%. 25% is a perfectly normal, healthy consolidation. It would be great for this market to do a 25% consolidation. The problem with how high we are now is we have to go down 30% before we know in a bear market to get out. And it's one of the reasons why in the last year and a half, so much of my recommendations on equity have switched into hedged equity, where the hedges protect you on the drop. They drag your investment yields down. So if we had not been hedged, we would have done better over the last year and a half. But, you know, there's no way to know when that consolidation hits. So right now I feel very, very conservative because we're levitating at very high valuations. Okay, the second scenario is global musical chairs, and that's where we go to a multipolar world, but we stick with a negative return on investment to taxpayers. And that's pretty tough because it means the squeeze on the middle class is going to continue to be very significant. And that is where you want to make sure you're in a very good place in terms of one of the things I said in the bullet points is geography matters. So you want to make sure you're in a place, both the general health of the place, but your relationships, your network, your community, where you are safe and there's economic opportunities. Even in this environment, there's going to be a lot of economic opportunities in 3.0 with new technology, and that's, you really have to pay attention. And anything you can do to get yourself positioned in 3.0 is important. And the question is finding a place in 3.0 that is both human and you're comfortable with. In this scenario, it's extremely important to retire debt and maintain a low overhead. And if you can, avoid all dependency on any kind of government money, because government money can get pulled. As I do in most of these scenarios, I stress it's really important to have a core position in precious metals. If you don't know what I mean by that, please read it. Several years old now, but it's just as relevant as it was when I wrote it. It's a commentary on the website called "What Percentage of My Assets Should I Hold in Precious Metals?" It's a question I get a lot. And I think it's an appropriate time to have your core position if you don't have it. Now's a good time to get it. And then I said maintain resources in multiple jurisdictions. If you have sufficient resources to do so, in this scenario, it's definitely an advantage to have your feet in more than your feet in more than one place. Prepping, I believe it makes sense. You know, the danger in any of these scenarios is we have a disaster, we have a dip in the economy, something that hiccups the supply chain. And if you have a good disaster recovery kit, if you have cash and food for anywhere from 1 to 6 months, you don't have to worry about it. You're prepared. Now you certainly have to worry about whether the people who around you are prepared or not, which is always why it's good if there's a wider community effort. But I think in this scenario, it's unbelievably important to have a cash reserve and liquidity. And in this scenario, then the global equities may not do as well. It's you're going to be want to stick more with the developed world. The developed world is probably going to be much stronger. One of the things we'll see this year is if we do repatriate a lot of cash, we'll see how the emerging markets perform in the face of that. And again, I say the same thing with the global musical chairs. It's hard to predict in the short run what's going to be attractive. And so stick to disciplined allocations, stick to balance, stick to diversification. The third scenario is mind control. It's a unipolar world with a positive return on investment to taxpayer, but it's got heavy, heavy mind control. One of my biggest concerns is the rollout of 5G, and I talked about it tonight in Money and Markets. I'm concerned about 5G because of EMF radiation. I'm concerned about 5G because it will allow hologram technology, I believe, that could be used for things like false flags and engineered events. I'm worried about 5G because it's going to make it easier for to do sort of ubiquitous entrainment subliminal programming. And I'm worried about 5G because I think they could literally weaponize the population with Kingsman kind of events of the kind we've been seeing, brawls in malls and the Chuck E. Cheese brawls. So I'm very, very concerned about the sort of what that's going to do to people's minds. So this scenario is one in which people have material comfort, but their mind is not their own. I mean, it's kind of a zombie slavery. Anyway, so it's not a world I want to live in, and again, this is one where you really want to get as far away from empire as you can. So self-sufficient living far from the urban centers is very, very desirable. And this is really where you want to spend your money getting out of Dodge. Again, you want to stick to very disciplined allocations. So finally, the scenario number four is called the war machine, and it very much looks like the one we're in right now, which is the unipolar world and the negative return on investment to taxpayers. And you know, this is one where you want to maintain as low an overhead as possible. You know, all the other things apply. In this scenario, bonds, corporate bonds of high quality are going to look a lot better. The other thing that's going to look pretty good is agricultural land and operations and income-producing real estate. But this one is, you know, this one is a tough world because it looks like where we're going right now. And if the military budget claims more and more of what's left of the budget, the squeeze on the middle class is going to be strong, and the currency debasement is going to be strong. Now, let me walk you through a couple issues that I want to talk about that really apply this year. The first thing is fixed income versus equities. You know, we've had a long-term bull market in the bonds. It's coming to an end, and we're shifting to a bull in equities. And that means what you're going to want is you're going to want really strong companies with good dividends, and strong debt that's more secure. Think of this as a shift from government being an attractive investment and government bonds and securities being attractive investments to companies being investments. Now, many of those companies are teamed up with government, so and highly dependent on government. So, to a certain extent, we're putting a new face on an old credit. But we are shifting from a debt model to an equity model. The question is, will we do it nice or rough? But what that means is, in many respects, you're much better off with a higher allocation of equities than traditionally, as long as it's companies that really have endurance for this environment and can produce a reasonable dividend. Because food companies have an inelastic demand, it was one of the reasons I took such a close look at the publicly traded food companies in the annual wrap up. Anyway, so think of this as a real shift from having your money in fixed income markets to equity markets. If I could get in 1998% on a bank CD, I didn't, why go into the equity markets and take the risk and volatility? Now we're getting very, very little on fixed income, and the risk is going up tremendously in fixed income, particularly if rates should start to rise in a meaningful way, although I don't expect very meaningful increases. But what that means is, to a certain extent, equities are safer, but you do have to live with the volatility. So think of this as a giant shift from government to companies and from fixed income to equities, and in your securities portfolios, adopt a more equity-oriented strategy. Now, if I'm right about currency debasement as a result of financing the military budget, we run the risk of real asset inflation. We're certainly seeing it in the equity markets and in the real estate markets, throughout the G7 world, is what I'm seeing, although it's spotty in some places. But clearly, we've got balance sheet inflation, asset inflation. So, all of that argues for equity markets. A second issue that's really affects investment strategy now is, should you get an active manager or should you use the index funds? One of the things that's been happening in the equity markets is so much of the performance is coming from a very few number of stocks, and it's extremely hard, with some exceptions, to predict what will get the gains. So year to date, 10%, 50% of the gains in the S&P have come from 10 stocks. That's very, very lopsided. And what it means is, in many ways, it's safer to simply invest in the index. For me, the problem with the index managers is, one, I'm putting money into companies I don't want money in. But the other thing is, it's essentially you can't hedge. And I feel it's very, very important to hedge. So I care about which stocks I'm in, and I care about the, sort of my ability to protect on the downside. Other than those two reasons, there's no doubt the way to get financial performance is to go with an index fund and significantly lower your fees. You want to focus on something that has low fees. Third issue I wanted to just mention to you, of course, is hedged or not. And at this point, I think the U.S. markets are so high and the chances for a major correction are so great, that I prefer to give up a little bit of the yield on the upside and stay hedged. So hedged equity for me right now in this environment is the way to go. Big problem, fourth issue, is right now there is a compelling argument to say that you should put all your money in a few areas. One is called FANG. FANG stands for Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, and Google. You have a couple of technology companies that have really been leading the market. So, everybody's interested as to whether or not Amazon will be the first $1 trillion capitalization stock. But the capital gains in Amazon are incredible, and I think will probably continue. But anyway, so there's a temptation to put everything in a few tech companies that are sort of rolling the markets. The other is what I call the Richard Mayberry strategy. Richard Mayberry has a newsletter that I get and very much enjoy, but His strategy basically says, look, everything is going to go to a unipolar model on force. Take these five defense stocks, and between gold and these five defense stocks, you know, you'll get great dividends and you'll survive the asset inflation. You make a lot of money because everything's going to be war. And if you look at the charts, if you look at performance for the last 10 or 20 years, if you look at the world, the way the world's going, it makes total financial sense. The only reality is I have no interest in financing an inhuman civilization. I'm not interested. So I personally don't want to be on the Mayberry plan. My compromise is if you look at the companies focused on space, now there's a lot of crossover between space and defense, but if you just limit yourself to companies that are really space much more than defense, you still end up with a group of stocks that, in my back testing, significantly outperform the S&P. And I think that reflects the fact that there is a major push. I believe globalization was engineered really to create the capacity that we needed as a society to go into space in a big way. So I think the demand for space is even more inelastic than food. And so I continue to work on building our list of space companies because I think that is going to be one way to get outperformance. I think that, to me, you want to invest in the primary trend, and I think that space is one of the big, deep, long primary trends that's really going to drive economics. Interestingly enough, if you look across my experience as an investment advisor, consistently the best financial opportunities I see are ones that come to, and it's always a unique individual, it's their own private company or it's a private equity through very old and known network, or it's a real estate opportunity, or particularly an income producing opportunity. But these are all coming from conservative sources, people with proven track records that they can trust. And it's not something that you and I can just find on the internet or look up. It's very hard to find, and it really comes through networks of trust. And I continue to see that whether it's a private company that you own and operate, or private equity, or private real estate, those absolutely provide the best yields when you have those opportunities. One of the questions I get asked a lot is, should I own or rent? And it's hard to answer that one generically because it depends on where you are. And what your situation is. I think if owning can help you significantly reduce your overhead, anything you can do to reduce your overhead, you want to do it. At the same time, we're seeing areas around the country and around the world where you're getting tremendous bubbles, and some of those bubbles could collapse. So again, it depends on whether you are. We just saw every indication is the London upscale real estate market is really collapsing with Brexit. But generally, I think that we're in for serious currency debasement of much greater than we've seen so far, and potential for significant asset inflation. I think that's part of what's holding up the equity markets. It really is unique to you and your situation. If you're in a place where really things are very bubbled, and if selling and moving to a lower cost area is going to help you, then you definitely, now is a time to consider that. Next issue, investment versus overhead. I can't tell you how important it is when you are looking in the face of potentially significant inflation to get your overhead down. When I, in 2006, I settled a litigation and got a lot of money, and instead of using that money to buy a expensive piece of real estate, I bought a tiny country house in about the lowest cost area in America. I have three properties here. 2 1-acre residential properties and then a small commercial property. My combined county and state and city taxes, or property taxes, sorry, county and city property taxes, are $500 a year. Now, people who live in big cities who pay $25,000 or $40,000 a year always faint when I tell them. But I figured, okay, well, they can double my property taxes and it'll be $1,000 a year. One of the reasons I did it is I'd gotten a pretty good look of what was coming in the federal budget and state budgets. And I wanted to be in a place where, you know, when the big increases came through, those big increases wouldn't really roll me. And I've seen people all over the country struggling with enormous increases in property taxes or the potential for enormous increases that could be just unbearable and dramatically impact their real estate value. So the other thing is I wanted a property with my own well because I didn't want to contemplate a rising water bill. I just saw an article, it was up on the, we posted up on the website, describing the fact that you now have families around the country who literally can't afford water and, you know, they have to go to the well and carry it in or go to a central area and carry it in, but they literally don't live with running water anymore. So I wanted a well. I didn't want to have to grapple with a water bill. If I could have found a way with my neighbors to put together an energy capacity so I didn't have to pay an energy utility bill, I would have done it. But I could never get enough neighbors interested in doing our own energy thing. It's one of the reasons I suggest you pay off the mortgage. I know all the arguments of why you want the tax deduction and why you can take the money and put it in the market and get a higher yield. I wouldn't do it. I'd just get out of debt, get that overhead down. I'm a person who had a highly successful business with a very profitable and rich cash flow and had plenty of assets and money in the bank. And I had a mortgage on my property just because, you know, it didn't make sense to, you know, take the money out of the market and put it in the real estate. Boy, do I wish I had not even bothered to have a mortgage, because when trouble came, it was a real headache to get it extinguished. So I would say anything you can do to permanently reduce, to invest money so that you can permanently reduce your overhead as opposed to keeping it in the securities markets, I would absolutely do it. I'm not going to cover cash. We had a great first quarter wrap-up last year called Where to Stash Your Cash. It's as relevant today as it was then. So if you're interested or thinking about how to manage your cash, I strongly recommend you read the first quarter wrap-up 2016, Where to Stash Your Cash. We also did a great interview with Dan Perkins of Hidden Safes, who talks about sort of how to manage safes, how to put a safe in your house, etc. So I would really go out and take advantage of those two. Next thing, invest in yourself. In this environment, it is so important to, in terms of education and skills, to keep learning, to keep growing, to keep changing. Number one. Number two, it is so important to invest in your health, particularly because our number one risk, I believe, is not financial, it's environmental pollution. And there's a great deal we can do proactively in terms of spending money on health care, and on high quality food, etc. So you really want to proactively invest in yourself. Also, invest in your network. You've heard me tell many stories, if you're a Salary Report subscriber for any period of time, when I got attacked by by the entire federal establishment. You know, I had given or lent $250,000 to friends and family, and over the next 11 years, that $250,000 trickled back. Moreover, I had wealthy people in my family who said, well, she always helped everybody else, so I'm going to help her. So it was, it literally, if I hadn't done that, I would never have made it. So I have to tell you, generosity really does, what goes around comes around. And now it's very important to be generous, and people who are deserving and worthy of generosity. I've seen many clients over the last 10 to 15 years try to help people in their family, only to be stiffed or badly treated. So, you have to be extremely careful. But where you invest well in other people, it always saddens me to see somebody sitting on a whole pile of cash making nothing while their kids are paying 5% on their mortgage. And you think, wait, you could keep all of this in the family, refinance your kids out. So in a very discerning way, invest in your network, because your network are the people who are going to be there for you, particularly kids and grandkids. Again, have a core position in gold. My favorite quote on gold is always have enough gold to bribe the border guards. So this is really insurance against the worst case. Now, yes, if they manage to get complete central control, everybody in the central banking system, they cancel cash and go to digital currencies and we're all chipped, your gold will probably not be worth a lot, but it'll be worth a lot to them. They'll want them. But I just think gold is a great central bank insurance, and if we're in danger of asset inflation, I think the bull market in gold is going to reassert. And if you look around the world, what are the Russians and the Chinese buying? They're buying gold. Finally, prepare for significant volatility. I've said this several times tonight, and I'm going to keep saying it. I have never in my life been in a situation where the variability of possible scenarios is as wide. And that means you need to, one, be prepared for multiple scenarios, but you also need to be very broadly diversified in terms of where you have your money, in terms of custodians, jurisdictions, and types of investments. Now, every person is different, and how much diversification you have depends on how much total assets you have, and your own unique situation. So I find there's tremendous variability in what I would advise one person versus another. But I think you want to make sure that everything that you invest, whether it's cash, whether it's securities, whether it's real estate, you have confidence that that company or that place has real resilience and endurance, and you're prepared to leave the money in for the long run. So there's certain stocks, if they take a dive 25%, I'm not worried. I'm not worried, because things go up and down. Markets go up and down. Even rigged political systems go up and down. So don't put your money in anything that doesn't have the kind of endurance that you're happy to live through a down patch with it. Because the way you're going to make money in this environment is to get scared and pull it out when things are down, and that's what you want to avoid doing. The real message of the last 5 years is anybody who kept their money invested, that kept earning the dividends and interest, came out ahead to anybody who was sitting in cash and just getting debased on down. So if asset inflation is upon us, and inflation is upon us, and I think the clear message is, it is, and it could get greater, then the last thing you want to do is be sitting in 0% earning. The question is, how do you keep it earning without being very, very concerned? And as I said, in the equity markets, the way I've done it is increasingly to go with an active manager who does hedge portfolios. Okay, then I wanted to talk a little bit about family risk. I've been talking through with several families about risk issues, and I thought it would help if I just made a list of the risk issues that are worth considering. And so I put a post up on the website, it's up on the homepage, and it has a little chart with a red risk in the middle of it, and the title is Family Risk. Anyway, so take a look at it. I'm just going to walk you through. The assumptions were that it was a family of four with two children, and they lived in a densely populated area. That was what I was focused on. I have several requests from people saying, hey, would you do that for single people? And yes, I will do that for single people, although there's tremendous crossover. If you take a look down this list, here's my number one concern for people who live in densely populated areas. What I see is a series of trends converging at the same time on people in a place, and it's going to create tremendous stress. I just earlier talked about 5G. You have the United States population in a state of deep denial about what might come through the budgets, both the state budgets and the federal budget. So we have a day of reckoning, and it's here, and we're going to have to change. So if you take any issue like healthcare, you have the pharmaceutical companies not willing to function by the market. You have the insurance companies who want to have a business, but you don't really need them to get healthcare because people need healthcare. They don't need insurance. And by putting the insurance industry in the middle, you just create a whole layer of intermediaries and costs. And then you have the general population who are eating food and, you know, from a very industrialized agricultural industry. To get to health, you really need to reinvent and reorganize how you do agriculture, which would be great for the economy in many respects if you could have much more happening in the local markets. You know, so big impact on agriculture. And then you have a general population who, if you look at our lifestyle and our eating habits, you know, we need to change. So in combination, you're talking about whether a corporate infrastructure, a governmental infrastructure, a financial infrastructure, and a general population who really have to change. And if you look at where we are versus what will be economic, you're talking about a really big change. Anyway, so whether it's healthcare or many other different industries, we have a general population which has evolved habits and has evolved economics based on massive amounts of debt growth. And that debt growth is no longer there to support this kind of sort of cheap allocation of capital. So capital is now going to get expensive, which means we have to go into radical change. And the population has not faced that, doesn't understand that. And in the middle of this, instead of having meaningful feedback loops that would help all of us take a look at what's going on and figure out how to change and change, we have a feedback loop in the form of a media that is trying to keep us from really understanding what's going on in a way that we could really do something about it and keep us going on a cycle that makes money for certain constituencies and special interest. And what you've got is literally a mess. Now, whatever comes down from the federal budget or from state and local government budgets, particularly if you're in an area where there's serious pension lack of funding, you know, big surprises are going to come down through those budgets, and they're going to be hitting the population at the same time we have an increase in the EMF radiation, and I believe in all sorts of sort of mind control manipulation. So we have enormous financial stresses that are going to be continuing to make, literally wipe out whole sections of the middle class potentially. At the same time, you have manipulation of mind increasing, and we have continued environmental pollution. And I think if you look at all of these stresses coming at the same time, you're talking about from a psychic an emotional and cultural standpoint, a huge pig moving through the snake. And what I see, when, particularly when I'm in the dense areas, is an inability to adapt and tremendous tension and kind of violent behavior. And so I'm, you know, this has nothing to do with the stock market. It has nothing to do with the bond market. It has nothing to do with what bank you're in. But I think the time has come to really think about what is the, you know, what is the humanity, and I'll just go, what is the popsicle index of the place you live? And now is the time to get to a place where the popsicle index is high, or certainly where your popsicle index is high. And for different people, that means very, very different things. But I am extremely concerned in areas where there's going to be heavy, both federal and local or state budget pressures, combined with heavy rollout of 5G and the technology. I'm really concerned about inhuman environments. So I think each of us has to say, is my environment human, and how do I get to a human environment? How do I get as far away from inhuman civilization and as deeply embroiled and embedded in human civilization? So think about that, because to me, that's where your big risk is. I continue to believe the number one risk that my clients and subscribers face is both the inability to have a clear, coherent mind or a strong physical body. And so I would just really encourage you to put that first. Now, coming up, what to look for in the second quarter. First of all, you know, we're coming into the summer, we're coming into a slow part of the year, and we're also coming into the first budget of a new administration, and we're going to hit a debt limit all at the same time. So all of that could wreak havoc with the stock market. And as I said, we're overdue for a 25% correction. I think the chances are very, very good. Even if we get a 25% correction, I think we're in a long-term bull market for equities. So don't be surprised to see some, to get some very ugly corrections and lots of screaming and beating of drums by people who, you know, who have been very spoiled by the market just continually going up. So be prepared for equity market corrections. They're highly likely to come. That's number one. If we don't get them, then yours truly is going to be worried a lot more in the fall. The French election could have a significant, again, this Sunday is just the runoff, but or the first round. We're going to have another round following that. But if the French elections go in a manner that threatens the European Union and the EU, it's going to be a lot of money running, even more than it has into the dollar. At the same time, we have a clear indication just from the last 2 weeks of what the Trump administration has been up to that we're looking at significant military budgets in the United States and significant currency debasement to achieve those budgets. Now, we'll see what the president does in his May budget. We'll also see what happens with tax reform. So a lot has yet to unfold. What I would say is inflation is something you want to be thinking about, and both expense inflation and asset inflation, it's not going to be good for incomes whatsoever. So the slow burn is going to get turbocharged, it looks like, by the Trump administration, and we all have to be prepared for that. And finally, the state budgets are being made to face their lack of funding for whether it's health care or pensions. And so if you are in a state with a high unfunded pension and debt liabilities, you want to be thinking about whether you want to stay in that state or not, or how you're going to cope with what may be coming. So again, federal and state budget changes are going to be rolling down on us. The Fed budget will not go final until October 1st. So those changes will start to roll out after that. If we get tax reform, that could certainly increase the GNP. And it's interesting, if you look at Kissinger's latest newsletter, Kissinger clearly expects a jump up in GNP next year. So every indication is they think the economy is going to be improving. So again, very, very wide variability in how it could impact both equity markets and currencies. And so if you look at every asset class, fixed income, equities, and commodities, very, very difficult to tell which is going to be attractive and which way they're going to go, which is why I say stay in very, very balanced allocations. And of course, dividends matter. So you do want to keep getting those yields. The biggest mistake I've made over the last 10 years is keeping way too much money in cash, and I keep regretting it. But also, there's something to be said for having cash if you get a big consolidation. So I always like to have cash if things go down. Anyway, so those are my comments for the first quarter equity overview. I would really encourage you to go look at the charts on the web presentation to revisit the scenarios. You don't have to use my scenarios. You can make your own scenarios. But I think it's very, very important to work through those scenarios. And then I would pull out that risk list, even if you don't have a family, even if you're single. And I would sit down and really go through the different risks that you're managing in your life and your place, and think about how you can organize the allocation of your time and your money, both personally and professionally, so that you are as much as possible in a human society and working with really excellent people who share your values, because that is absolutely the way to go. It was funny, when Dr. Farrell started to get me interested in preserving the culture, I really didn't understand what he meant by it, but now I really do. And so it's going to be important. Anyway, let me know your questions on anything on investment strategies or markets, and I'll make sure we address them. Next week, there's no money in market, but I'll address them in the first week of May. So, ladies and gentlemen, it's always a pleasure. And, you know, I hate to use that old Wall Street expression, you got to be in it to win it. So it's a wild environment, but ultimately, if you look at the people who do the best, they're investing in building the future, whether it's in their own business or other people's businesses or real estate or land. I do think the people who do well are the ones who build the future, and there's always opportunities no matter how crazy things are. So with that, I'll be back for the second quarter equity overview in 3 months. We were gonna team this up with Rambus's Chartology. He had surgery, and as soon as he's back on his feet and doing his charts, I'm gonna have him do the Rambus Chartology for us, and we'll publish it as soon as it's available. So keep an eye out for that. Ladies and gentlemen, have a great evening, good night, and good luck.